There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
Today on The Grave Talks, My Haunted Fowler, a conversation with Dwight Sneathan. Fowler, Indiana is a small town with a population of around 2,400 people. However, it seems that many of its former residents have lingered beyond the grave. From the eerie historic Fowler Theater to the ominous old Benton County Jail, ghostly sightings and unexplained phenomena permeate the town's history. Within the walls of the historic Fowler Theater lie mysterious noises, looming shadows, and tales of three restless spirits. The original owner, a manager who passed away due to tragic circumstances, and the ghost of a child. Meanwhile, the old Benton County Jail bears witness to Fowler's haunted legacy. Former Sheriff Alva Hartman's ghost is said to roam the premises, tied to the shootout that ended his life in the late 1800s. Visitors report ghostly footsteps and shadowy figures testifying to the spirits that inhabit this grim locale. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation with Dwight Sneathan, founder of My Haunted Fowler, a social media presence promoting the paranormal activity at the historic Fowler Theater and Old Benton County Jail and other haunted locations in and around Fowler, Indiana. So, Dwight, thank you so much for joining me tonight. I came across the Facebook page for My Haunted Fowler, and I had first come across the Fowler Theater, and somehow, you know how you go down a little rabbit hole on the internet, and then it led me to your Facebook page, My Haunted Fowler. So what got you to start that page?
So I've lived in Fowler about 14 years. I'm from the area originally, but I moved to Fowler about 14 years ago with my wife and kids. And when we first moved here, I've always been interested in the paranormal. As a kid, I loved anything alien, ghost, Bigfoot, whatever you could throw at me. I wanted to learn more about it. And over the years, just continued with that interest, but never had anything ever happen to me. When we moved to the house we're in now, and I had no affiliation with the theater at all, we had just started noticing little weird things around the house. Noises, sounds that might be, you know, you might think it's a mouse and so you'd write it off. Voices, shadows, a lot of it we were doing while we were doing our construction. So I just thought it was interesting that we were having these experiences. And then a few years later, and we lived here, we took our boys to the movies at the Fowler Theater, never really got much connected with the theater. And then about 2017, I was asked to be a part of the theater board. So the Fowler Theater is actually an all nonprofit owned theater, and there are no employees. It's all owned by the nonprofit, and it's all ran by the board. So I was invited to be on the board. And I don't know, a few weeks into getting trained and how to run a movie on a movie night, I was working by myself, putting the cash box away, and there's a screw-in light cover outside of the office, and I'm just minding my own business. I close the door to put the money away, I hear this noise outside. I open the door, and I see it on the ground. So I pick it up, and I screw it back into the ceiling, thinking that's kind of odd. The next day, I talked to the director, and I told her what happened. She said, oh, it's probably one of our ghosts. Of course, my answer was, what ghost? And from that point forward, I was hooked. Even though, like I said, had stuff happening around the house, this was at another situation. And then 765 Paranormal, actually. So 765 is the area code in this area.
I was wondering if that was where that came from.
Yeah. So that's how they had their name. And they had been, unbeknownst to me, they were also investigating the theater based on other reports that people had provided. And so I came in one night during an investigation and I asked a million questions to the point where either they wanted me to shut up or they wanted me to truly join them, but they invited me to be a member of their team. And that's how I became a part of that team. But as I had more stuff happen at the theater and other people would tell us stuff, I would get messages from someone because I started to share what we have, whatever we had recorded. We didn't have any security cameras yet, but I would share it. And then people would hit me up on the Fowler Theater page and say, hey, did you know this? And hey, this happened to me. And all of a sudden I started getting other reports of other people's activities at the theater and in their homes or around town. So that's what spawned me to start My Haunted Fowler. So it's been a progression, and it's now where I am today. We continued the investigations of the theater. Then I reached out to the sheriff's department, and they gave me permission to do the same thing in the old jail. And we have another place in town that's really not open for investigation on a, like what we do with the theater or the jail. But it's a historical society. And the building or the location itself, we don't believe is truly haunted as much as the items that have been brought into the Historical Society Museum area. So it's another area. We've even done some residential areas. So we have this belief that the town itself is haunted. Therefore, My Haunted Fowler.
Fowler itself is only around 2,000, 2,500 people in there.
Correct.
So that's a lot of activity for a little bitty town. So I was wondering if there are quite a few haunted locations.
Yeah, the house that was originally built for Moses Fowler, the namesake of the town, we've investigated there. The people that owned it, I think they're still there now. I might be wrong on that. I believe they were in the process of moving, but they had reached out because they had activity, and we're pretty confident it had nothing to do with Moses Fowler, but a gentleman by the name of Gustav Pratt, who died of mysterious causes in the 1930s. But we've only been in there one time. We got a pretty decent EVP and some EMF spikes, but that for the most part hasn't been a lot in that space. There's an old building that housed an opera house years and years ago. The lower section was turned into a tire repair place. They've since moved on. We investigated there as well. They would hear voices down in the basement, or when they were in the basement, voices upstairs and no one around. And another couple of locations where people have, they're not, and this is all in the, when I say downtown, you picture a very small street with very few buildings. They had shared their experience, but they didn't want us investigating because they were trying to sell the place and they were afraid it wouldn't sell if someone knew or thought it was haunted.
And what about your house? Because you were doing some renovations maybe when you moved in and that kind of ramped up activity, or... What do you think is going on there?
So we know that one person passed away in the house. I have had conversations with that person's stepdaughter, and I've kind of agreed to not talk really a lot about or post a lot about it, about him in particular. But I will say that we've had a lot of interesting things happen that I always couldn't explain. There probably could have been explanations, but, you know, they happen in the moment. My kids would tell me, they'd hear their names being said in their bedroom while they're playing alone. My oldest, over several years, said he would wake up, see me sitting on the edge of the bed, turn on the light, and no one was there. Then just this last few months, we've had, I'm in my office now, and I have cameras in the house in general, but the one in here, I just kind of have kept up because weird things were happening when I was working from home. So I thought, well, maybe I'll capture something. And I've got a video of a hat that's been sitting in a location for, I don't know, weeks. And it just, I don't want to say flew off, but it definitely fell off. But it was at an angle, but it was hooked to this part that made it hard to move. I had something up on these cabinets that are sitting next to me that in the middle of the night, you can catch just in the corner of the video where they fall off the top of the cabinets. Well, I kind of, you know, I don't see the whole action, so it's hard to know. And then this weekend, I was doing a ghost hunt, at the jail. I got home at 3 a.m, went to bed, and I got up about 7:30 or 8, and I came into my office, and this metal, I'll call it a basket bucket, was laying on the floor, and I hadn't seen it before, so I thought maybe my wife had been looking for some flowers at Reddit. I checked the camera and found audio. There was an audio alert, but no video. And at 7:30 a.m, we're all asleep in bed. This thing comes crashing down off the top. We've got a motion light in our laundry room that has come on by itself. And so I'm trying to figure out, you know, do I have something else going on? Yeah. Did I bring something home with me? Or is it just a series of events that I wasn't watching for? Like, could that bucket have been pulled to the edge? I find it hard to believe because I'm in this office every day, and I feel like I would have noticed it teetering on the edge. The hat vibrations happen. People walk by. It's always possible, but the way in which it fell or moved off of there was really weird. So I'm now moving the camera around to see if I get a better shot of the whole room. So part of me thinks that it's possible that I have activity from previous inhabitants, but it's also possible I brought something home with me, which isn't the first time that we had things happen after what I'll say some quiet times. Like for about 3 months in our family room, my wife and I would smell this, what smelled like cherry pipe smoke in one spot and one spot only. And then it just went away. And there was nothing that we could put our finger on as to why. Neither of us smokes. Nobody smokes.
And it's such a distinct smell.
Yeah, exactly. My grandpa used to smoke that. I knew what it was, and I could not identify it.
You know, it's interesting, in a town this size of Fowler, everyone would have known everyone. Anyway, I lived in a town that was really little, in a haunted house, in a very small town, 1,200 people. So everybody knew everybody. But I guess it wouldn't be a stretch for other people to stop by your house, you know, because you all know each other. So in life and in the afterlife, maybe they kind of do that. I don't know.
I believe that there is some traveling that occurs. I believe that's what's happening at the theater. I don't think it's all theater related. We don't have a long storied history of deaths in the theater, but we have some connection to that. We have some connection to deaths near the theater. Before there was a theater, it actually was part of a hotel. So there could have been things that happened that were in the hotel as well.
Sure. Now, the theater is really cool looking. It's a very Art Deco design, which is one of my favorites. It was built, am I correct in saying it was built in 1940?
Yes.
I'm always fascinated by haunted theaters because I think that there are people who worked there, or even as is the case now, volunteering there, who really, really care about the theater.
Yes.
And so I see why there are so many haunted theaters. There's people, you know, the man who built the theater. There might be actors or stage managers, people, you know, who are just so connected that it makes sense why they stay there. And in this case, it could have a few different spirits. What do you think about the spirits there?
So for me, we had one manager in 1968 who took his own life. And in 1967, he attempted to take his life. So we think that there is a level of connection there. We believe that when we started the renovations, the original owner, Dick Velastos, was checking back to see what we were doing, see how things were going. And then I think anyone that might have been associated with either could have come back. So, for example, we had one of our very first groups that came in that investigated us that were not a part, like they weren't 765. They were somebody found in Indianapolis. Indie Ghost Trackers. Well, and I want to mention them because they're awesome. They came up 95 miles this past weekend to watch a movie and donate money.
Oh, I love that so much.
Yeah, I was not expecting to see them show up at 7 o'clock at night for a movie. And so they were there and they were doing some, you know, EVPs and so on. And they were in the projection booth and they're asking questions and they got the name Russ. So I always ask permission because to me, when someone rents our venue for that night, it's their venue. So it's their footage. It's their experience. They already paid for all that. I'm not going to nickel and dime them. So I tried to be respectful and I asked her for their permission to put the video up, and they were very willing to do so. So I put that up. The next day, I get a message from someone who says, "Hey, by the way, my dad used to be a projectionist at the theater. His name was Russ."
Oh, and he had passed away. That gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, and we've had the name Russ several times. So that makes me think it's not always just someone died in the building or, you know, something happened in the building per se. That it is, you know, if you're coming back to check on things, the afterlife is probably, maybe it's easier to travel. And right when they built the Fowler Theater, right across basically the alley was the Dreamland Theater. And Dick Vlastos was the manager there, and he was the one who had the Fowler Theater built. But the woman that reached out to me, her dad was also the projectionist there, so he followed Dick to the theater for a while, to the Fowler Theater.
So that's kind of an interesting scenario, because that wouldn't have been, I'm sure, a very big town then. And they had two theaters, so it almost sounds like there was some kind of competition going on.
Yeah, I've seen some of the older theaters, and they were not very big. They were like just a handful of seats, a small storefront. And the Fowler Theater, which isn't huge, but it was 300 seats at the time, it would have dwarfed the Dreamland Theater. And I found some news articles, or someone has shared news articles, where there's still information about both theaters running at the same time. But it could not compete with the Fowler Theater.
Now, was the Fowler Theater, has it always been in operation? Or is it like so many, you know, a lot of cities across the country in the 20s, 30s, 40s, even before then, actually, built these really great theaters. A lot of them went into disrepair. Some of them have since been torn down. But like the one we have here, it probably sat empty, I don't know, 20 plus years. Was the Fowler Theater like that, or was it always in operation?
I would say that in kind of that comparison, it's always been in operation, but it had its lulls. It had its transfer of ownership. The 90s was probably, from what again, this is before I got here, but the 90s was probably when it had its major decline. Mm-hmm. And in 1999 is when the owners of that at that time were going to basically turn it into warehouse space. And Karen Moyers, who was just an average citizen, she's kind of a superhero, but she was an average citizen at the time. She literally, and this is how it was explained to me, ran across the road as they were at the torch. They had the torches out to basically cut the marquee down. And she asked for, I think it was a week, to get the money to come up with so they could buy the theater. So she went home to her husband. I got the story retold to me this weekend by her, she and her husband. And she walked in the house. She goes, "Well, Dawn, we bought a theater." So she had talked to somebody like who's no longer in the area, but she was an accountant or something. And she helped Karen form the Prairie Preservation Guild and then buy it as part of the nonprofit, create the board, et cetera. So the Prairie Preservation Guild then owned the theater, and everything after that took off in terms of fundraising, repairs. There were periods of time where they would take the theater down, do some repairs, bring it back up, show some movies, try to keep the interest for people, but also trying to raise money. And then in 2015 was really the big grand reopening of the theater. We had all new seats. We had all new auditorium. I mean, they really basically gutted the interior. Because it's a historic landmark, there were certain restrictions on what we could do to the exterior. There were things we could add, but there's a lot we really had to, you know, stay in line with, right, to keep the historic relevance. But on the inside, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see some of the interior photos.
Yes.
But when you walk into the concession area, above your head, you'll see this ornate design that may look painted in the pictures you've seen. Mm-hmm. But it looks like, from the old pictures that I saw, it was more of a silver bland color. A gentleman bought, David Orr. His last name was Orr. I'm going to draw a blank on his first name. But he laid on his back on scaffolding and hand painted it for weeks, worked really hard to make sure no lines overlapped. And, you know, it was that kind of attention to detail that just made a huge difference. We didn't have a really decent concession stand. So we took out about 100 seats so we could add on an office, some storage. and build out a really strong concession stand. And the whole inside, it's one of those things, one of those places that looks great when you see it, the pictures, but you really can't appreciate it until you walk through those doors for the first time and you just take it all in. And even watching a movie in that auditorium, that classic look and feel, it just, to me, I sometimes just like watching a movie and watching others watch the movie. That sounds kind of creepy, but you know, taking in that whole aura, that presentation that you get that a classic theater will give you versus a chain theater might, and nothing against chain theaters, although we're competing with them, it's just that it's a destination place. It's really more than just movies.
Now, at some point in this process, did other people, before you got there, did they start thinking there's something going on here? That
oh, for sure. When they started the renovation, and that's so when I said, and some when I described what had happened, the director said, "Oh, maybe it's one of our ghosts." I started to learn all about what happened during the renovation period. So as they're tearing the place apart and they're rebuilding it, people would report seeing a man in a trench coat and a fedora. They'd see shadow figures, doors opening, just different things happening. Something I learned later, because I had found I captured a video on one of our security cameras of what looks like a very clear, like see-through kind of creature, animal, whatever, move toward the front doors and disappear. Well, I posted that video, and one of the former board members responded, "Oh, is that our ghost cat?" And I'm like, "What ghost cat?" So apparently they would spot a cat and it would be there while they're doing the renovations. It would just disappear. And they just figured, no, it's a stray. It's running through here. It was funny. It was fun to have her connect my video capture to what they called ghost cat. But her husband had, he shared this before in the documentary, so I don't think he would care. But he's the principal of the high school. He's very much not into any of this. He was maybe I would say non-believer. And during the renovations, he was one of the first ones to report seeing a man in the trench coat and fedora. And also he was on a ladder. I think this was him. I'm pretty sure it was him, was on the ladder. He said, felt like the ladder started to go backwards. And before he actually fell, it felt like someone pushed the ladder forward and there was nobody there.
Yeah, and he should have been on the ground.
Things. Yeah, there's just been various reports. Pre-renovation, yeah, even before the renovations, they were doing ghost hunts. I don't know a lot of those folks. I've met one gentleman who's been there a couple of times, and he's captured a shadow figure and caught some EVPs. So there were reports even before. Everything was mostly anecdotal, though.
I always find it fascinating when it's someone who is a non-believer. They think those of us who believe in the paranormal are kind of crazy. But then when it happens to them, I always find that fascinating. I'm like, okay, now how do you explain that then? Because you know what you saw, and seeing a man in a trench coat and a fedora would jump out at you anyway, because that would be a very unusual way for someone to dress now.
Right.
And so you would really notice that. And then if it disappears or, you know, what,
you know, in the 1940s, they all dressed that way, too. Exactly. They said that was what Dick always wore. Dick Velasco's the owner.
You know, that makes sense. You know, he built the place. He would be very attached to it. With the paranormal investigations, has that been relatively new that you guys have been doing that the last few years?
Yeah, we dabbled a little bit starting in around 2018. And we were doing public investigations. So we would bring people into the theater. 765 would lead the investigation. We'd break up into a couple of groups and we would just investigate the theater. And they would bring equipment. It was sort of a twofold, make some money for the theater, but also educate people on what ghost hunting was about. So the first part of the program would be teaching about the equipment, teaching about what experiences have happened here, recommendations on how to deal with anything in case you feel uncomfortable or you feel weak or sick or whatever. And we did that for, I don't know, maybe about the first year. And I can't even remember the first group that investigated outside of our little clique. But it just kind of took off from there. And I have a little bit of help now, but I was pretty much running all the investigations. You know, we were doing maybe one every couple of months, and it took a lot of promoting just on social media primarily. I did go to a paranormal convention with one of our other board members just to get some pamphlets out and brochures and talk to people, understand maybe how they did it and what we might want to do. Then also I did a lot of research on what venues charge, is what I didn't want to do. So I didn't want to like make this where nobody would want to go, but it was an opportunity to help put money back into historic preservation. So we don't get, you know, we charge for the service, but we put all the money right back into the Prairie Preservation Guild. And so once I felt like I was in a good place in what was fair and what was going to benefit the theater, we started promoting it a little bit more, to the point where now in April, I have 3 weekends lined up. We just had 2 this month. We've got more asking throughout the summer. And one of the things that I often get out of this for myself is new connections, new people, new ways of investigating things I haven't even thought of, getting to meet people from literally all over the world. We had a lady come in from Finland to investigate here at the theater and the jail. And so to me, that is one of the cool parts. And then sharing the history with folks and having people like that group that came. So we had the movie Saturday. We had indie ghost trackers come in from 90 some miles away. We had Northwest Indiana Paranormal and regional investigators of the paranormal both come in from about 70 miles away. And they showed up in force. They probably filled up half or at least a quarter of our seats. That was awesome. That was the kind of support that we're getting. I would say because they love coming to the theater and the jail itself. We've made it where I feel like most groups want to come back, even if it's just to hang out. I've made quite a few connections and I'll even say friends through all of this, and even gone on ghost hunts with other groups, other locations. So really, I don't want to sound hokey, but we're trying to make it where this is a, maybe not a family, but you know, it becomes part of that paranormal community.
Yeah.
And you feel welcome and you want to come back.
I would think it is kind of a paranormal family, especially when they show up and they're supporting what you do and not right. just go there to investigate. That means a lot.
And that really helped too, because there's a lot of word of mouth, you know, and neither location is huge. It's not, you know, Indiana Sanatorium. They both, I think, provide good experiences. We do have to, you know, you probably have experienced this yourself, but sometimes you sit in an investigation, you stare at a wall for an hour and nothing happens. But that part of it is kind of, in my mind, it's a part of doing what we do. It is dwarfed by the historic irrelevance of a place you get to see. And the arc, you know, the old Benton County Jail was built in 1876 and it's still standing and it's a solid building. That part of the history of it is really cool, and the architecture.
It looks solid, you know, just the pictures of it. And I asked you earlier before we started recording if it was limestone, which...
Yeah, all limestone exterior.
Yeah. So, I mean, a tornado is not going to knock that building down. You know, it's there for good. And the jail was in operation for a long time.
It was an active jail until 1997.
It's 1876.
So, yep.
To 1977.
1997.
Excuse me, 1997. Isn't that something? Like, yes. That's a long time.
I would agree, because a lot of buildings that may have been used for other services, I haven't always been in the best shape. Now, there are some things that need fixed, and we've been working on it. We don't have a lot of extra resources beyond the theater. So, you know, we sometimes will get a donation. We'll put in our own money. But the roof probably could use some repairs. You know, we tried to do some repairs ourselves. For the most part, the rest of it is pretty solid inside and out.
I also love talking about these old jails and prisons because, you know, so many of them are just like this. They were built a long time ago in operation, continuously in operation for over 100 years. And when you think about it, in 1876, things really changed from then till 1997. So when when they built it, they wouldn't have had central heat, air.
Well, in this building, they didn't even have interior plumbing. You know, when they first built it, you can see when you go in the basement level, there are holes in the walls where pipes have been added, plumbing and so on have been added. And when you go to where the main cells are, there's two levels of cells. And the second level, the last cell on each side is a big concrete bathtub. I haven't confirmed this, but my assumption is they used an old cistern system to catch rainwater.
Oh, yeah.
And use that to bring water into the jail. The conditions, I will tell you, the conditions were not great. We had that confirmed by a former jailer. There were reports of lawsuits by the inmates because it was too hot in the summer, too cold in the winter. And when you go back to 1870-some, down in the basement, there are eight cells that we call that area the dungeon. And there's a newspaper article about a sheriff in 1964, his former sheriff, and he had shared that they used to take inmates down into the dungeon and they would chain them to the wall and they would leave them there. And his words were they would confess or go insane. When you go down there, you can see the holes in the walls where the loops were into the walls for holding the... So they would take, basically, they had these hoops in the wall, and they'd run the chain through these hoops, and then they would chain the inmates down there. We wonder if maybe it was used for, like, what that sheriff said, but also some, like, solitary confinement. You know, you have ore overflow. There are two small windows at ground level. You can get some light, not a lot. So, yeah, I can't imagine January in Indiana down in one of those basement cells.
Well, in Indiana gets cold in the winter, and I'm going to guess it gets hot in the summer.
So, oh, yeah. We're like Florida in the summer, and we can maybe not Antarctica, but I have lived here my entire life, and I think the worst wind chill was -70.
Could you imagine being in that building? And I'm assuming at this point, at some time, they did put some heating in, maybe plumbing, toilets, things like that, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, when you go into the main floor where the main cells are, there are radiator kind of wall units along the wall. Each cell, after they did some renovations, had their own toilet and sink. But if you go up into the top, you kind of go back in time because they didn't renovate upstairs. Let me rephrase that. They didn't make them habitable. What they did when you go upstairs in the eight cells above, there is like electrical conduit run through the walls. So as they were trying to continue keeping the jail going for, you know, they didn't want to build a new jail. So they did that kind of stuff. So the rooms upstairs stopped being used long before 1997. But up there, there is one toilet, one sink, one bathtub for the whole floor.
Oh, wow.
So that was, yeah, it was even, it gives you at least an idea of what it used to be like before they quote, made it better, like the bottom cells. But none of the cells were spacious. You know, they're not. Well, no, jail's not ideal anyway.
And I'm going to just assume that you've done some investigations in the jail as well.
Oh, I have been a part of many investigations in both locations.
Is it pretty active?
Yes. And it's so different. You walk into the theater, and there are times that the theater, it's pretty quiet. Seems like a lot of the activity there that I've encountered have been in when you're not trying, when you're just in the building. What's made a difference, I think, too, is that people bring a lot of equipment. Now you can try an SB7, and you can bring out equipment and see if you get these things to happen versus in the past you sat, listened and waited and took a picture and maybe something happened and you had stories to tell. Now with technology and us having security cameras all over the theater, we get stuff a lot. The jail, we don't have all of that, but when you walk in there, the vibe is totally different.
I was going to ask you about that. It just seems like they would be two totally different places. The energy would just, you know, just from reading some of the stories I've read about the jail, there was some pretty intense people there. And like there was a sheriff who was killed in a shootout in the jail. And is that true?
Yes, yes. I've been playing around with ChatGPT and AI. using some of those tools to get more information, just so people have investigated before I ever was involved. And they, you know, there's a story or a snippet or something somewhere, but I don't know who to ask because I wasn't around. So I don't know what they found, what they did. And so I started using ChatGPT to see if anybody had put something out there that would have that same kind of information that we could dig into and find. And it's actually been kind of cool that it will dig well beyond where, you know, I know to think to ask. And I'm trying to look up the name of the sheriff. His last name was...
Now, I wrote it down because I have notes. Mm-hmm. Alva Hartman?
Hartman. Yes, yeah. Alva.
Alva Hartman. He was the sheriff.
Yes, and he died in the shootout.
Which is interesting because a shootout means somebody else had a gun in there as well. So do you know, was it someone who they were bringing in? Maybe they had arrested?
Yeah, see, that's the part of the story I haven't been able to uncover yet. Was it somebody, you know, wanting to come get their family member out of jail? Was it somebody that wrestled that a gun away from a deputy?
Yeah, all I found was exactly that. Like, this guy was shot in a shootout, the sheriff, and end of story. But they do say his ghost haunts the jail. But, you know, I do find that to be pretty common, that the jailers, the sheriffs, are still there frequently because you wouldn't leave the jail unattended.
Right.
You know, that's your job, and you took it very seriously, and you have to protect the citizens a Fowler from these people. So I could see how you would stay there after you passed on.
Well, and when you walk into the jail, and it's not unique to the Fowler jail, but the front part was residential. So the sheriff and his family actually lived in
right
the front
there.
Part, and the inmates were in the back.
You know, work-life balance is important, but man, there would be no work-life balance if you're, if your house was right there.
You bring your homework with you every day.
Every day. Could you imagine living with that? Because I would imagine, you know, even though it's a big building, you could still hear them if they wanted to be heard. They could be yelling and stuff.
When I look at how they would have closed them off, I don't know how you would have been able to eliminate that sound. Now, the family was on the second floor, and the second floor isn't attached necessarily to where the inmates are. So that might have been the way to separate it, but I just couldn't imagine raising a family of little kids. A friend of mine whose grandfather was a sheriff for a couple of years, my friend's dad was like 2 at the time. I just can't see raising a kid, you know, in that kind of environment.
And often the wife would be the matron, or she's helping prepare meals. She's working there as well.
Yeah. And that was the way it was done until 1962, and the practice of the wife having to prepare the meals stopped. However, in 1958, Fowler, Benton County, had elected a female sheriff. So my guess is when she became sheriff, she was saying, yeah, I'm not doing that anymore. I got other duties to do.
What year did they elect a female sheriff? That's impressive.
1958.
That's amazing. Your community's very forward-thinking.
Because probably more so then than maybe later years.
As is sometimes the case. And that wraps up part one of our conversation with Dwight Sneathan about My Haunted Fowler. For more information and information on paranormal investigations, visit their website at fowlertheater.com or search My Haunted Fowler on Facebook. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, the archive, advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. You can sign up on Apple Podcasts where you can try it for 3 days free, or you could go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you so much for listening.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.